Welcome into the Fan pregame. SportsCenter, Sportsnet 590, the Fan for the next hour and a half. We're going to do a little pregame show for Toronto and Milwaukee on SportsCenter at 8 o'clock and on SportsCenter 590, the Fan at 7:30. So we're with you till then.
Yeah, it's the start of the NBA Cup. One of my favorite things. I think I'm the biggest NBA Cup guy going.
You're one of the only NBA Cup guys going.
It might be the case.
I hope to pick up steam this time around.
Yeah, I don't know. The novelty may have worn off. We'll see how it goes this year, but I'll be banging the drum for it. We're going to talk a little bit more about that at 6:30. Try to figure out if we can figure out who's going to win this thing before it starts tonight.
Yes, Raptors have 4 in-season cup games. Tonight against the Bucks, Friday versus the Pistons. That one's at home with the new purple court. The 29th versus the Heat on the road, and then back home against the Pacers on the 3rd of December. So we'll be looking at their bracket and how they can find success. And we're going to chat with Matt Bonner in about 10 minutes, who's going to go through everything Raptors related and more, including another injury to Emmanuel Quickley, which we'll give you updates to in just a little bit. And then around 6:30, we'll talk to Thomas Drance of Sportsnet 960 and The Athletic, of course, about Canucks and Flames, which is a big one here tonight on Sportsnet 1 at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, Canucks trying to bounce back after a maybe eye-opening loss to the Edmonton Oilers over the weekend. You know, they were on a really great run, but you lose to the Edmonton Oilers, it kind of takes away a little bit of that goodwill. So Vancouver trying to bounce back, but Calgary had a pretty impressive showing last night on Monday Night Hockey there, a big win over the Kings. So two teams that are definitely of interest right now.
And then at 7 o'clock, we'll just go to our radio-only segment. We've got a charcuterie of topics to go through, including the newest update from Canada Soccer, which is about the investigation on the drone situation. So we'll go through that, and we'll talk a little bit about just a collection of items, including Kyle Dubas saying that everybody except for Sidney Crosby is available for trade. Very spicy things.
That's a good start there. Good first chapter there for Kyle Dubas in Pittsburgh.
Okay, but what we want to lead our show with today is more Juan Soto discussion.
We're kind of like the people that have to tackle this now, right? Because it's Kipper and Bohr, and they're not going to talk about Juan Soto. You know, we got Sportsnet today before that, but it feels like it's kind of our job, good or bad, to talk about Juan Soto as we keep getting
don't hate us
reports connecting him to the Blue Jays. So here's the latest.
Okay, the latest is Juan Soto has been penciled in as the first meeting with the Blue Jays in free agency. So the Blue Jays will meet with Juan Soto in California this week. This is per Jeff Passan. They'll have the first meeting. The Red Sox are next, then the New York Mets, then the New York Yankees. The Juan Soto sweepstakes are heating up. So Blue Jays, first ones to get an opportunity to talk to Juan Soto. Does that mean good things for the Blue Jays to be first in line, or does that portray bad things for the Blue
Jays? First off, I like how you corrected Passan's grammar there very quietly. That was very good. I don't think it means anything, like order of go. But I will say, if the Blue Jays can make a statement here. Like, first impressions are an actual thing, right? Like, in any walk of life, in any situation, a first impression can be key. And if the Blue Jays just say, hey, Juan, we love you, and nobody is going to give you more money than us. If they just say that, like off the bat, like you can talk to these teams. They may have this sort of situation. They may have a bigger market in New York. They might have the sunshine, the weather, and everything that goes with being a Californian. All those things are clear. But if it's all about money for you, and we apparently have it somewhere locked and key, no one's going to give you more than us. And we can guarantee that. Like, that is a statement that they could make. But if it's just like, hey, here's our best pitch, and we'd really love you to come play with Vladdy, like, I don't think it matters that they're going first. It probably doesn't mean, like, Juan Soto probably didn't order this in any material way. Same with Scott Boras. But I do think a first impression can matter. And I think there's an opportunity to make an impression. It's just, do the Blue Jays have that ability? Do they have that wherewithal? Mm-hmm. Do they have what would be needed in order to really make an impression on Juan Soto?
I am maybe shockingly being the cynical one in this situation, the less positive one. I think it's bad that the Blue Jays are going first.
Okay, why?
I think that they come in and they put the biggest offer on the table because Scott Boras and everybody knows the Blue Jays are extremely desperate. Mm-hmm. And they say, here is what we are willing to give. And then they go, thanks, Blue Jays. Let's go. You set the table nicely for the next best offer and the next best offer. And I think, not that I have a little trauma from last year with the Shohei Ohtani situation, but the Blue Jays are what everyone is using the terminology, the most desperate. They need this to happen. So once they know what the biggest bid is off the start, every other team comes to the table with the advantage of being like, well, we know the Jays said this and this, so we're willing to offer this and this. So at that
what
point,
if there's no bid?
What do you think they're going to say, like, blank check?
No, what if it's you're not going to find more money elsewhere? Like, you could try, but if the Mets are giving this, we'll give you a dollar more.
I think there's a limit.
We'll always give you a dollar more, but maybe there isn't. Maybe there's something there. But if you don't actually give them specifics, if you don't give them to something to compare another team to, you can just be like, the money's going to be better here than anywhere else, and you and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are going to get to decide basically how this franchise runs. Like, if it's complete car keys, blank check, I think that works better, certainly, than like, hey, here's the $20 million we're going to offer you. Like, that's not going to do anything, clearly. But if they just come with like a measly offer, and measly being
relative, they have to put it all out on the table.
It's not
going to
be something that works. It's just going to be like, you can have everything here, and you can go look elsewhere. You can have everything here. I think that's the only way this works in their favor.
So I think that that's probably the strategy that the Blue Jays will take, because they don't have the upper hand of the Mets, who are a more competitive team. They don't have the upper hand of the
They're probably richer.
And the Yankees, who were in the World Series last year. And what's the other team that they're visiting? The Red Sox. Okay, maybe the Blue Jays and the Red Sox can be similarly losers in this, but
sure, they could be in your situation, just setting the table.
Setting
for
the table for, and what was the order? I'm just going to look one more time. It goes
Mets and Yankees.
It goes Blue Jays, Red Sox, the two bottom feeders to be like, here, we'll give you this, and then the Mets and the Yankees.
Oh, you are really negative about
maybe
this.
Maybe the two actual suitors in this in the end that get to go last. I think I've been burned before by this situation.
Okay, but like, you know, you can be an underdog in something, and certainly they're an underdog.
Yeah, but if you're Juan Soto, would you rather play for a team that was last in the AL East last year, or a team that was in the World Series or close to the World Series?
But that's the key with Juan Soto, is that he apparently just wants the biggest bag of money.
But I doubt that. What if the Athletics offered him $1 billion. You think he would go to the Athletics?
I think he'd
Are
say,
they even called that
damn,
anymore?
I
the
look
A's?
Good. The Athletics. They're not,
okay,
they're
I got it right
else.
Now.
Be like, damn, I look good and green.
I think he doesn't want to be like
in my hands.
Like, I don't think he wants to be on the worst team in the world. When
okay, that's maybe hyperbolized a bit.
Okay, so
because Oakland's
I understand.
Not,
yeah, Oakland's
not
interested.
Not going to be interested.
But I think if it's coming to
Sacramento now.
Yeah, I don't, just where, the where do they play? I still think it's between the Mets and the Yankees. Like, I'm just really having a hard time believing it. Even if the Blue Jays are saying, "Well, any dollar that you know the Mets offer you, we'll do one more dollar." I just think competitiveness matters to me. Maybe I'm just never been offered this much money. But like, if you're choosing between $600 million and $601 million, but one team is right in the playoff push. You could win a World Series. You could live in New York, or $600 million to be on a team that's in the bottom of the AL East that thinks that you know they can find internal improvement. I just maybe I would want to play for a team that's better.
You are overlooking though one thing that I said. Like, if it's car keys to the franchise, you and Vladdy, who we know your buddies, like, hey, let's make this team DR. Like, let's make this your team. You guys can have all your buddies. This can be the thing. Like, you put together this team. We build around you and Vlad, and we're going to sign Vlad right after we sign you. You're not going to get money, more money elsewhere. You're not going to have more control over how the team looks and feels and operates. Like, that is, those are the two things that, if it were me, would be very enticing.
Yeah, but the Blue Jays said that they only have $20 million or 25 maximum to spend this offseason. So if you say to Juan Soto,
well, then what's
Vlad,
the point in having this meeting?
That's it. Well, was there special money for him?
Okay.
But let's say you do sign Juan Soto and you say, we'll pay you $600 million, $650, whatever. And you give him the car keys and stuff. That's expensive cars. This is like, where is that extra money coming from?
Well, this could be a process too. You know, there's only $66 million committed in player salaries beyond 2026. Juan Soto's only 26 years old. So it could be, hey, it's not like signing you is the key this winter. But next winter, boy, we got a lot of wiggle room. We can sign pretty much anyone because you and Vladdy are such an incredible draw. And why wouldn't all your buddies who you fraternize with at MLB All-Star Games want to come play with you two, maybe the best 3-4 or 2-3 batters in the league if we can put it together? I just think if you can flex the money thing, which apparently they can, and you can flex the Vladdy thing, I think at least you have a leg to stand on in that negotiation.
Or again, else he wouldn't take
it. And if it's like, hey, we only have $25 million to spend, like you're wasting your time with Juan Soto and he's wasting his time.
And Scott Boras isn't going to make this meeting happen if he doesn't know that the Blue Jays are serious.
And he's been talking up the Blue Jays as well.
Like we mentioned it with the Passan tweet today, but Heyman of the Post yesterday, John Heyman, saying that there's 8 clubs in on Soto. Yankees, Mets, Blue Jays, Dodgers, Giants, Red Sox, and 2 mystery teams. Could be the A's. Athletics. says the Jays are highly motivated and will be in big to pursue the 26-year-old. Like, this is a great opportunity to ask our text line question as well before we pivot to Raptors. What percent chance do you think the Jays have to sign Juan Soto? And give us the context. Don't just text me 5. Like, let me know, because I might be at 5% chance. I'm not saying there's no chance. I think having a meeting is very important. You got your name in the running. But do I believe that they are going to have Juan Soto? It's hard for me to get higher than 5 right now, but I'll give you 5. So let us know at 590-590.
I probably wouldn't go over 5. But again, I do think they have a couple things that they could say in this meeting that would at least be worth monitoring. Again, could just be a leverage play. It could just be wasting time. But I think big bags of money and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a good starting point.
Okay. Text line's open, 590-590. Let us know. We'll circle back to this in a bit. But let's bring in Matt Bonner, the Raptors show, joining us, our newest teammate. Matt, appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
I'm doing great. If you hear anything in the background, I'm walking down Bloor Street from the subway station to One Mount Pleasant for the broadcast tonight. So that's
no problem. No problem. I know
I
that.
I can already hear a siren coming up behind me.
They're going to be coming for you.
I hope not.
No, you're all good. Okay, let's talk about the NBA Cup. That starts tonight. The Raptors have their first of 4 games, and they got it against the Bucks tonight. Do you care about the NBA? Like, what's your thought on the NBA Cup? Obviously, it's like the second season of it, the in-season tourney. What's your perspective on it as a former player?
My perspective on it from a former player is it's awesome because human beings are simple creatures. It doesn't take a lot of incentive to get us to, like, do crazy things, like really care about a random 4-game stretch in the middle of the season. And, like I remember when I was on the Raptors, I don't know if this is going to be like a salary cap, ratting out Sam Mitchell salary cap violation, but, like, he wanted us to take more charges. Like, no one was taking any charges. I remember he, like, took his wallet out before one of the games. It was like, anybody who takes a charge tonight, and he took out, like, a $50 bill, you get a $50 bill. And, these are NBA players. I wasn't making big bucks back then, but we had guys on our team making millions of dollars. And I swear to God, we took, like, 6 charges that night. If guys are taking charges for $50, now you got $500,000 prize money, or maybe it's more this year. I haven't checked. And it's a trophy. You get a trophy. You get to say you were the champions. For whatever reason, that seems to mean something to the NBA players, because I swear the games have a little extra juice. We saw it last season. Guys play a little bit harder. If you're off to a slow start, or maybe you had guys that were injured and now they're coming back, it's kind of like a reset. Everybody goes back to 0-0 in the standings for this thing. And, you know, anything can happen. So I think it's kind of, for all those reasons, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I might be the simplest creature. You just show me a bracket, you show me some groups and a schedule, and I'm excited. It just makes it a little bit more interesting. And you mentioned the money thing. I don't know if it's more lucrative, but Emirates is the title sponsor. So I imagine there might be a little bit more money involved. I don't know if he's bringing out the wallet, but do you think this is a useful thing for Darko Rajakovic with a young team? Like, yeah, the season has been encouraging in a lot of ways, but the record is the record. But you get to start from zero again, and you get to potentially, you know, be spoiler, upset a team that thinks it should be the favorite in the group, or so on and so forth. Like, do you think this is something Darko can use to get his guys from a motivational standpoint?
I think so, and it's like good experience where these games, because there's a little extra juice to them, it's not your, like, typical mundane regular season game. It's not the playoffs, but it's something in between. So, like, this is a team that's rebuilding, probably not going to be in the postseason if we're all being honest with ourselves. So maybe this is, like, the next best thing, where there's a little more pressure when you go out there and lace them up to try to get them some experience in bigger games. And, yeah, spoiler, I mean, you look at the record's not great, but they've been so close so many games. Who knows? Maybe they figure out how to execute and not commit stupid fouls and take care of the ball down the stretch, and they start winning some of these close games in these NBA Cup games. Again, anything can happen.
Yeah, the Raptors are a 2-9 record, as we know, but it feels like there's still a lot of excitement around watching this team and a little bit of optimism, as you mentioned, because some players have been, like, you know, outperforming maybe their preseason projections of where they would be, and the chemistry has been there, specifically with a lot of injuries. When you're watching a team that is going through rebuilding and there are highs and lows, like, what's the most important checkpoint every night when the Raptors hit the floor? Is it just that, like, work ethic, that non-quit, specifically when you know the odds are against you, you got some more injuries, and you're 2-9 record? Like, how can they keep in check what their goals are when, you know, winning doesn't always have to be the end result for this Raptors team?
Yeah, I mean, the foundation is two things: play hard and play together for 48 minutes. And I think they've done that pretty much every game. And as a former player and someone who not only just covers this team, but I played for this team. So I have, like, pride being a Raptor. Mm-hmm. And I want the new guys that are representing those jerseys in this city and, this, frankly, the whole country, to play with that level of pride, that you're going to play hard and you're going to play together the full 48. You're going to check your ego at the door. You're going to put the team first. And it seems like that's what they've done. Are they dealing with some injuries to very important players and maybe not as talented as some of the teams they've gone against? Yeah. Are they super inexperienced, especially coming down the stretch in special situations and close games and pressure moments? Yes, and we've seen that bite them in the butt, and they've lost a bunch of these close games. But you can never point to, well, they lost because everybody's playing selfish. Everybody's out there for themselves. Or they lost because they played soft and didn't play hard and got outworked. So I think from a foundational standpoint, they can check those two boxes. And then if you're doing that, you can slowly build up everything else. And it's a process that involves player development, everything I just talked about from a team standpoint, and then obviously roster building too. So I think fans should be proud of how they've played so far, despite the record, and should be on board with this process.
On the phone with Matt Bonner of the Raptors Show, another Emmanuel Quickley setback, unfortunately, partial tear in his elbow, UCL, reevaluated in a week. Barnes, Barrett, and IQ have yet to play a single minute together so far this season. Like, the Quickley setbacks are one thing, but the fact that those three haven't been able to work together, how concerning is that for you?
I mean, if this was the year they're trying to, like, make a run, I would be very concerned. But because it's a process, it's a rebuilding process, I don't think, you know, there's a silver lining to it. A bunch of other guys are getting rotational minutes and experience that are invaluable that otherwise they wouldn't be able to get. So I think in the big picture, if everybody sticks together, has each other's backs, it could end up being a blessing in disguise. And I think we're already seeing some of that. Like Jonathan Mobo has been super solid out there. You know, is he getting all these minutes and important rotational minutes if everybody's healthy? Probably not. Jamal Shedd, probably not. And he's been, you know, had his moments and looked like he can be an NBA player and someone you can count on in the future. So, like, a lot of these young guys, Jamison Battle, another one, mm-hmm. rotational guy. Is he a rotational guy if everybody's healthy? Maybe not. So I think in the grand scheme of things, it could be end up helping this rebuilding process, just believe it or not.
Among those whose careers may be not promised and may, you know, require a situation like the Raptors are in, where, yeah, they'd rather have IQ out there and the, you know, the main guy's healthy. But if you had to pick one to buy stock in, a guy whose, again, career may be not promised, who would you pick on this Raptors team?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm really digging Jamison Battle, just because of his skill set is so different than everybody else on the roster. Just as, like, he has good size. He seems to have a nose for the ball. He really cares, like has a great motor and plays hard. And just catch and shoot guy, he's a shooter. I know the numbers haven't been super great to start the season, but I can just tell, like he's going to figure it out. Like, it's going to click. We've seen flashes of it. We've seen games where he's hit big shots from the three-point line. And everybody in this league is talking about these 3-and-D guys and how valuable they are. I think he can develop into a valuable 3-and-D guy.
All right. We'll buy some stock in Jamison Battle. Matt, we appreciate you jumping on. I know you're on your way to the building, so we'll say hello through the door. And appreciate you jumping on. We'll definitely chat soon.
Awesome. Anytime. Thank you.
It's Matt Bonner of the Raptors Show. We got a broadcast tonight, an 8 p.m. start, Toronto at the Milwaukee Bucks. That will be the first in-season game for the Raptors, and they have three more Friday versus the Pistons at home, the 29th versus the Heat on the road, and then back home versus the Pacers on the 3rd.
Hard to really make an argument for the Raptors to emerge from this group, given that the Raptors are 2-9 on the season, last place in the Eastern Conference, but there are no heavy hitters here. Like, Cleveland and Boston are the only teams above 500 in the entire Eastern Conference. They're in the same group in the Emirates NBA Cup. The Bucks are the favorites. They're in a bit of a rough spot. That's
a
understatement. Indiana, Miami kind of stuck in the middle, and Detroit's shown some flashes here, but still the Detroit Pistons. So the Raptors, I don't know, can you win this group going 3-1? You probably can't go through on the strength of plus minus, but you know, the Raptors going to win over the favorite Bucks tonight. They're going to be in a really good position to potentially get through. And again, we're weighing the pros and cons of, you know, having success all year with the Raptors, but it does feel like something that they could at least involve themselves in.
Okay. You have laid out a very great criteria on the other side of the break, which we'll get to in a bit, about what makes an NBA Cup champion. And I did
with the 1 year of history,
but I've done none of the work. So
yeah, what happened there? I was leaving some space for
you. You did it all. And so you're going to convince me on a team on the other side of the break. But we opened our text line up at 590-590. We've got about 2 minutes to go through a lot of responses. So thank you for bringing them up and sending them over. We'll try to get to as many as possible. But I'm just going to start clicking away and reading some. They have a 0% chance to sign Soto. He wants to win, and the Blue Jays are nowhere near competitive. Sign Vladdy, Bichette, and some pitching and build a team. Next text. Honestly, there is a 0% chance that this happens. Their meeting with Toronto to drive at the price will be the runners-up like we always are. Next one. Honestly, 0% chance. Ooh. It's a big dog and pony show by Boris to drive up the contract. Ohtani all over again. Okay, I'll give you one.
Hey, can we just outline one difference between Ohtani and Soto?
Yes, please.
And again, I'm not trying to convince myself. I'm just leaving the possibility open. Ohtani's, like, they're building Team Japan over there. And it's close to Japan, closest to Japan. Ohtani wanted to be in California, comfortable
yep,
there.
Yep, I get
always
that.
Going there. Juan Soto has bounced around. Bit of a nomad.
That's
for a guy
true.
Who's only 26.
Have, like...
Washington, mm-hmm. San Diego, New York, maybe another team here, all in the space of, what, 7 years since he's been in the league. This guy is not... Like, I honestly believe money is the number one thing, and winning is probably secondary. But anywhere he goes, you have the opportunity to win.
Yeah, anywhere. That's
again, this isn't like it has to happen right away.
No, I understand.
He's 26 years old.
Totally agree. Let me read a couple more. Meg from New Brunswick. 50% chance. 50%.
Okay.
I think Soto would be smart to land in Toronto. He would have less star power to compete with and would really stand out with Vladdy as opposed to other teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees. I like that perspective.
Yeah, okay. He stands out in New York. I agree.
Well, it's New York City. You're not. There's a million things about New York that are more popular than Juan Soto. It's New York.
I think Juan Soto is bigger in New York than he would be in Toronto, but
I don't think so.
In what sense?
Like, you mean like star power?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's New York. It's the Yankees.
Yeah, but in terms, I think she meant more in terms of like competing with people on your roster.
Sure, but
or other athletes in the city. Like, who's bigger than Juan Soto in Toronto? Scotty Barnes?
Austin Matthews, probably.
Well, yeah, I guess hockey-wise. One quick one here. I think 5% based on having Vladdy connection and if they can sell it to Soto in the right way. Wondering if they can sell the angle of being the only team in an entire country and having fame like that. I'm not overly optimistic. It also depends on how much Vladdy's wanting to stay, too. So maybe whenever Soto signs, Vladdy follows. Wherever Soto signs, Vladdy follows. That's Alex. Ooh, I would hate that.
How much money's in the vault? That's the biggest thing.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side with what makes an NBA champion.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on The Fan pregame, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We have one more hour of our show. We'll shift over to Sportsnet 590 The Fan for a radio-only segment to get you set for Toronto and Milwaukee tonight with an 8 p.m. start on the television, but a 7:30 start here on our pregame show. We just talked to Matt Bonner. You can go back on our podcast and hear his thoughts on the NBA Cup and what makes the Raptors fun to watch. But Justin did all this hard work on...
Because I'm a simple creature, just as Matt Bonner said.
You like a bracket.
You give me six groups, you give me a bracket setting, you give me a final in Vegas.
And you give some
odds
betting
on the
lines,
MVP,
and we're in.
And I'm in. So I want to try and figure out who makes an NBA Cup champion. And last year, of course, it was LeBron James and the Lakers beating the Indiana Pacers in the final in Vegas. I don't think anyone... The Pacers got off to a great start last year, but I don't know if anyone really had LeBron and the Lakers winning it, but they threw up a banner, and it was really exciting in that brief moment until they thought it was no longer cool to be NBA Cup champions. But I think there's some pretty key things here. It's you know, you got to look at the groups, who has an easy path through. You have to have success immediately in order to advance. You probably have to win three of your four games. So if you're already an underdog against two, maybe three of the teams that you're playing, like it's probably not going to go overly well for you. But there's also that wild card where if you win games by margin, even if you don't win the game, the group, you can get through. So maybe you're targeting teams that have poor groups or bad teams in the group that they could beat up on. Health is key. Like Chet Holmgren's not available for OKC, who has one of the best records in the NBA. And that probably should affect their ability to win this tournament because, yeah, if you watched them last night, it's clear they're still sorting things out. But I think another thing is, who's going to be motivated to win a fairly unserious competition? Like, is Nikola Jokic going to want to go 44 minutes to try and get through into the semifinals? Or is he thinking about, the more important competition,
which is you're right with, like, a team that's, not going... Like, a team that's kind of got something to prove that is younger.
Indiana was perfect last year.
Yeah, Indiana was the perfect team.
And
so,
then things kind of...
Can they win it this
sideways.
Year?
I don't think so. They're definitely in a group where they could get through with Toronto, Milwaukee, Miami, and Detroit. But let's quickly just go through the groups here. We'll start in Group A in the East, and it's the Knicks, Magic, Sixers, Nets, Hornets. Like, it's pretty clear the Knicks are the best team there, at least coming in. But they're 4-5 on the year. Like, am I really excited about the Knicks right now? Mm-hmm. Not really, but you could probably pencil them to win the group. But again, not too excited about it. Same thing with Group B. Just mentioned Bucks, Pacers, Heat, Raptors, Pistons. Like, you don't really feel, or at least I don't, overly strong about any of them getting through. And Group C in the East is the Celtics and Cavaliers, the only teams with a winning record right now in the entire Eastern Conference, with three bad teams, the Bulls, Hawks, and Wizards. I'm looking at this as, okay, Celtics and Cavaliers both get through, despite the fact that they're in the same division, because they're going to be able to beat up on those teams. And for that reason, I'm looking at, like, Cavaliers for the NBA Cup MVP at longer odds, because there's a good chance they're going to be going through, playing in a semifinal and maybe a final out of the Eastern Conference. Is there anything that stands out for you in the East?
In the East? You mentioned it with the Celtics, like, but I don't know about the motivation.
That's key.
I don't know how Cavaliers care? They want to go win an actual NBA championship.
They may be so good that it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, they could probably just cruise through this and maybe Peyton Pritchard wins MVP because they could
What are the odds on that?
But again, they got to deal with the Cavaliers right out of the out of the chute. And I wonder if the Cavaliers take it a little bit more seriously.
I think the Cavaliers, in my perspective, would take it as like, okay, tune up for us being real serious in the playoffs, because they've had an incredible start. Can they prove that they can do it when it matters? And I'm using air quotes because, the NBA Cup matters, but it matters in a different way. It's more like a point of pride in a sense. And if they can string together that great part of performance to win this thing, it's almost like a test to themselves that they could win it when it matters. The Celtics just won. They know they can win. They know they could probably cruise, and they're the favorites for both the NBA Cup and the NBA Championship. So I like a team like the Cavs that want to, like, prove it a little bit. And they've got a lot of young guys that are kind of, like, coming up and having hot seasons that want to be like, ooh, yeah, put me in when it matters.
They might be the team that's like, hey, we'll rest guys in this semifinal because we don't want that extra trip to Vegas. That's a distraction when we're trying to win another NBA title. quickly in the West, because we've got to bring Drantz in a moment here. Group A, lot of competitive teams, lot of good teams. Group C, even better. Like four of the top 10 teams in the entire league are in Group C. So I'm looking at Group B with the Thunder, Suns, Lakers, Jazz, and Spurs. Thunder, as I mentioned, just lost Holmgren. They're working things out. Caruso was playing the big or playing the center position last night. It's probably not going to work. Suns missing Kevin Durant. The Lakers, the defending champions, are going to get a diminished version of the two better teams in the division, plus the Spurs and the Jazz. But here's the angle on the Lakers that I'm going to throw at you.
Okay.
LeBron can win something.
With his son.
His brother. His son.
His son.
He can watch a banner go up that his son was involved in.
I actually think this is amazing.
So the Lakers can beat the Suns without Durant, I think. Mm-hmm. They can compete surely with OKC without Chet Holmgren. And they can do what they did last year, which was take it a little more serious than anyone else. And Bronny wins something with his dad.
I love it.
I think we're Team Lakers. I think I have a banger MVP bet for the end of the show that involves the Lakers. But I think if I'm looking at one from a narrative perspective, trying to look at all these groups and all these teams, I think the Lakers stand out from a group perspective.
And they can go back to back. They care. They like it. Like, that means a lot.
They did last year.
Okay.
They played harder than pretty much everyone else.
We might be cheering for the Lakers to win the NBA Cup. Thank you for all the effort on that.
You're welcome.
Quickly before we bring in Drantz, some breaking news out of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Pittsburgh Penguins have traded Lars Eller to the Washington Capitals.
Wow, back to Washington.
For a 2027 third round pick and a 2025 fifth round pick, which originally belonged to Chicago. And he had a $2.45 million cap in the last year of a 2-year deal. And today, earlier today, Kyle Dubas reportedly saying that everybody is on the table except for number 87 and already standing on his word and making trades happen on November 12th.
How about that? Gets the biggest sweetheart deal in history and then says, you know, you have no supporting cast here. We're going to trade everyone if given that possibility.
All right. Let's chat with Thomas Drantz, of course, of The Athletic and Sports at 960. Drantz, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
What do you think of Kyle Dubas just saying, hey, I'm just going to trade everything but Crosby, so have fun with the rest of the season?
I mean, you watch this Pittsburgh Penguins team play, and they honestly remind me of the Canucks in sort of the late stages of the Sedin era. Now, obviously, me bringing it back to the Canucks, not a huge surprise. But what I mean there specifically is that when your core group gets to a certain age, right, and they're still good, but with aging players, you get that inconsistency issue, right? They can still, like, any given night, Letang, Carlson, Malkin can still be great, but you're not getting it on an every night basis. And in this league, you kind of need that, especially right now, from your best players. The Penguins aren't getting that. And then to top it all off, I think because of the age of the group, they look so slow, right? Like, it looks like the Penguins could hang in a game of half court or half ice. Like, if you were playing just on a quarter of the rink, I feel like the Penguins would be a playoff team. But over 200 feet, they're just getting skated off the ice on a regular basis by teams that are dangerous off the rush, but also by teams that aren't that dangerous off the rush. At some point, something's got to give. Lars Eller still has game. Like, I've really liked what I've seen from him, you know, even dating back to his time with Colorado against the Kraken. I thought he was a standout for them in the playoffs. I think he's maintained a pretty high level, and this Caps team is looking very interesting in the early going. Strengthening their center ice position, I think, should sort of stabilize their bid to be a pretty safe playoff team in the Metro based on what we're seeing, not just from Dylan Strome, but even guys like Alexi Protas and Connor Michael and on down the list. They're looking pretty imposing, pretty fun to watch at the moment.
Yeah, two ships passing each other, and they threw Lars Eller overboard, and he got on the other ship. Two teams, yeah, I can't believe the directions they're heading, honestly, how Washington has turned things around with the late stages of Alex Ovechkin, and here what's happening to Pittsburgh is honestly kind of sad, at least for me. Let's get to the Canucks. The Kansas City Chiefs and Buffalo Bills meet this weekend, and it's an interesting one because, yeah, the Bills can have a lot of success, but once KC rolls in, if they can't beat KC, we're talking about the same Buffalo Bills team. And I don't think it's the exact same thing with the Oilers and Canucks, but a lot of goodwill being built by the Canucks, and then they lose 7-3 to the Oilers, and you're not feeling as good to start this week about what the Canucks were building. Games against the Oilers, do they just mean more to Vancouver and to Vancouver's fan base?
I think they do at the moment, especially because in the Pacific Division, it's Connor McDavid and the Oilers, and yeah, Vegas too, but then it's kind of everyone else. Oilers obviously knocked the Canucks out in the Stanley Cup playoffs this past spring and are sort of the measuring stick by which the Canucks are going to be measured for obvious reasons. You know, we all see that the Oilers have gotten off to an inconsistent start to the season, but, you know, go check the outrights, like go check the futures market right now for which teams are most likely to win the Stanley Cup. The Oilers are at the top of it for a reason. We know what the true talent level of this Oilers side is. We know that they're the class of the Western Conference, and that'll be apparent over 82 games and probably into the postseason as well at some point. So for the Canucks to, you know, it wasn't a no-show. They battled back in the second and sort of looked like they were on the precipice of making a game of it before they got completely blown out in the third. You know, I think it is a disappointing result. And it's especially a disappointing result for the Canucks coming off of a 3-0-0 California road swing where, you know, they beat the Kings in regulation. It was kind of the first time this season that they'd beaten, you know, one of those playoff caliber opponents in regulation, right? They had a shootout win over the Florida Panthers earlier on this season, but that was the Panthers during their no Kachuk, no Barkov sort of 2-week stretch. And other than that, like when the Canucks bumped into the Tampa Bay Lightning, it was a blowout in Tampa Bay's favor. When they bumped into the Carolina Hurricanes, they managed to get it to overtime because of a baffling Kachetkov poke check attempt at the like blue line. But, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes, frankly, looked like they were in a totally different weight class in that game in Vancouver. They also got skated off the ice by the New Jersey Devils. So on some level, this Canucks team we know is a playoff caliber team. We know they're good. We've yet to see them really beat anybody other than LA. And so I think to have that sort of game against LA and then a few nights later, just 48 hours later, look, you know, pretty outmatched against McDavid and the Oilers, I do think that was disappointing for Canucks fans and for this fan base. And, you know, a pretty interesting sort of marker of the progress that this club has made, which is significant, especially in the context of the last 18 months. And yet there's still a fair bit of distance to travel, I think, when you're talking about stacking them up against certainly the Oilers in their own division.
How about stacking them up against this Calgary Flames team that they're playing tonight? We got that on Sportsnet 1 at 10 o'clock Eastern here. But it's another opportunity to play a team. And I was reading your notebook, like, Calgary had that hot start. And it was like, what does this mean for Calgary? Is this sustainable? And obviously, they're not going to go undefeated. But how do you evaluate where the Flames are at? And if this is a good test, I guess, for the Canucks to kind of get back on track? Or maybe a bit more of a chippy upstart team that the Flames deserve a lot of credit for when they roll into tonight's game as well?
Well, I do think the Flames deserve a lot of credit for being that chippy upstart team, for sort of playing with a level of spirit and discipline that, you know, sometimes we don't get, especially from those oddly constructed teams where you've got a mix of veterans that didn't sign up for the rebuild and then young players that haven't exactly proven themselves yet at the NHL level. You know, how many times have we seen that particular roster construction go south? Right. So I think they deserve a lot of credit for the way that they're competing and playing on an every night basis, whether they're winning or not. They're kind of never out of games, which has been fun to watch and impressive to me anyway, watching from afar through the first 4 weeks of the season. Tonight they're in tough, though, right? Like Calgary is going to be playing, I guess, their fifth game across 8 days in five different cities. So this is a game where the schedule hands Vancouver a pretty significant advantage, and it's an advantage that they better use. You know, this is a Flames team that beat them on home ice on opening night. Canucks had a 4-1 lead and sort of frittered it away as that game went along. So you'd expect them to be motivated from that. You'd expect them to want to put in a bounce back performance, maybe sign their signature to it, following the 7-3 demolition that they withstood at the hands of the Oilers over the weekend. So, you know, I do think this Calgary Flames team should be formidable. It's not going to be an easy game by any means, but it is a game where, you know, there's a variety of sort of countervailing trends in Vancouver's favor that you'd expect them to be able to capitalize on. And, you know, Rick Tocchet, in describing what happened to his team against the Oilers, noted that the big boys came to play tonight when he was talking about McDavid. You'd hope that the Canucks can have a big boys came to play type performance from some of their star players.
One of those star players, Elias Pettersson. I mean, the storyline that permeates this market most is what's going on with Elias Pettersson, what's going on with Petey. A goal in the last game, maybe one of the few bright spots against the Oilers, had six shots in a game and a goal a couple nights ago. Where's that storyline going, Drance?
Well, nowhere until he performs at a point per game clip and plays, you know, with sort of the two-way flair and juice that we're used to seeing out of Pettersson. I think until those things happen and are sustained for 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a month, maybe into the playoffs, it might be a matter of Pettersson being at his best in the postseason, frankly, before Canucks fans sort of put their guard down when it comes to their star player who struggled so mightily down the stretch and in the playoffs last year after being, you know, a bona fide superstar contributor for most of his career to that point. It remains mystifying, but I do think you're seeing signs of progress. The problem is, right, is this is a, you know, a guy who's been well over point per game across their first 7 seasons in the league, like a 400 plus game sample of hockey at which he's been picking his teeth with the opposition. And so in evaluating a player like that, you don't want to sort of fall into the trap of saying, well, you know, he did really well against the Edmonton Oilers middle six. You know, like that's too low a bar for a player of Pettersson's caliber. We can't sort of frame the discussion the way we would about, you know, your average top six guy. This is a star level player who's been a star level player his entire career. So, you know, I do think you're seeing some good stuff. I think you're seeing some of the simple sides of the game, some of his work around the net front as a screener. You know, I think his defensive game has been responsible, if not sort of dominant the way it has been in the past. So, you know, you're seeing him work like he's working his way through it, but you're just not seeing that special extra something, that little bit of mustard that Pettersson has usually been able to bring, you know, to the ice. That's still sort of, we're still waiting for it. And I think until we see it, there's still going to be a mystery around it and an incredible amount of interest in exactly where it's gone in the Vancouver market.
Mustard, the condiment of choice for Pettersson. What's the sauce Jonathan Lekiramäki is going to bring to the table tonight?
Good one.
Yeah, love it. you know, I in Jonathan Lekiramäki's case, I mean, this is a guy who has almost 40 shots across his first 7 American League games. So, you know, I don't know what sort of sauce comes with having zero conscience about throwing the puck to the net. But whatever sauce that is, maybe it's like white barbecue sauce or something.
Oh, wow.
But that's what
aggressive.
That's what, yeah, aggressive. Went a little niche there. the truth is that Lekiramäki's time down in the American League has been really impressive. Obviously, was the World Junior Championship MVP, had a tremendous SHL season last year. So, you know, there's a chance that he can really help this team. Obviously, they're down Brock Besser, who's still out indefinitely with what the club continues to describe as an upper body injury, you know, that we all think is related to a head injury stemming from the Tanner Jeannot hit, which he was suspended for. So they need a right-handed finisher. He's going to be placed immediately onto a top line with JT Miller. That's Brock Besser's spot. And Tockett's been talking a lot about wanting him to not defer. Just let loose, let it fly, shoot. And that's Lekiramäki's game. This is a guy who's going to have to manufacture shots, and that's going to be a crucial thing for the club. They need some one-shot scoring ability with Besser out of the lineup. Lekiramäki should be able to provide that. Where I think it gets interesting to track his progress here is actually related to the Daniel Sprong trade. Sprong, of course, shipped out to Seattle for nothing, future considerations, on Friday evening. And that sort of continues a lengthy trend that we've seen where players, whether it's Andrei Kuzmenko, now playing in Vancouver for the Calgary Flames tonight, Daniel Sprong, Nils Höglander, who scored 24 goals last season, will be playing on the fourth line tonight. You have to be at a pretty high level of accomplishment in terms of your defensive reliability to play big minutes for Rick Tockett. And if you can't sort of hit that level, then it's pretty hard to put up statistics sustainably, given that you need to be on the ice, you need to be in prime opportunities, and you're not going to be unless you're, you know, pretty excellent defensively as a winger. So that's sort of where this is going to be fascinating to track. Tockett hasn't had a chance to work with, you know, a top prospect, a recent first overall pick, whom the organization is obviously going to have a keen interest in developing, perhaps gradually. Right, there is an extent to which his sort of pathway here is going to have to be distinct from the one that Daniel Sprong, you know, a vet on a 1-year deal, or a Kuzmenko who's 27 or 28 or whatever. Right, those guys, you know, surely he's going to have to be a little bit more patient with a player like Lekkerimäki. But obviously, if Lekkerimäki is going to be an impact player in the top six for the Canucks, he's also going to have a pretty high baseline of two-way performance to sort of stick in that role durably. So it'll be fascinating to watch on offense. It'll be fascinating to watch this guy attack downhill because he's pretty dynamic there. But it's also going to be fascinating to watch how he sort of holds up on Miller's wing away from the puck tonight.
Well, I think I built a parlay. Kuzmenko revenge goal and Lekkerimäki over shots.
Let's go.
I think that's our combined team bet. I think.
There you go.
Okay, and it's Pettersson's birthday. Sure. A Pettersson goal, it's his birthday. I think we'll lock that in. And
Done.
Sounds like a win for us. Well, appreciate your time, Durant. This was fun. We'll catch up with you soon, and all the best.
Yeah, best of luck with your Lekkerimäki shots ladder.
Yeah. We're going to pay my rent with that. Thanks, Durant.
Thanks, Durant.
All right, that was fun. So it's funny you mentioned, I mentioned Pettersson because I do have him in my best bet. And tonight, of course, that game's up on Sportsnet 1, Calgary and Vancouver on Sportsnet 1. So thanks to Durant for helping tee that one up. I'm going with a birthday parlay. You know I love a good birthday bet. It is Shane Pinto's birthday and Elias Pettersson's birthday. I'm going to parlay those bad boys up.
Okay.
And it's just over 12-1 for them to both score on their birthday. It's their birthday.
The old Shane Pinto bet.
Yeah.
I'm heartened by the fact that Drance has a ladder in the garage as well.
Got a ladder. Or you can do our Drance combination bet here, which is a Kuzmenko revenge and Lekkerimäki
shots. Yeah.
Shots. Good luck finding that.
You also have a long shot bet. I think you should.
I love my long shot bet. And I don't kind of want to say it quietly so that nobody else bets it because it'll move. But we talked about this yesterday.
You moving lines.
We might. But we talked about this yesterday about who's going to make Team Canada's roster.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways you can look and bet some individual players. And I went on and I found a couple that I think are overpriced or mispriced.
Yeah.
But Marc-Andre Fleury to make the Team Canada roster as the third goalie, second goalie, first goalie, just to make the roster. 100-1.
I mean, I love it. I mean, you can't, that's like the rule.
Are there three more goalies that you know are going to make Team Canada?
No, you don't know any.
Look at this.
So in the absence of good stats, just take the nice guy who's hanging him up.
Who's 100-1. Yeah. I found Logan Thompson plus 340. Who's playing now?
I mean, he's playing well.
Yeah. Sam Montembeau plus 340.
Okay.
Like nobody knows who these goalies are going to be, so they're all just plus money. So just
it's worth a shot.
Dabble away at 100-1 for Mark.
And like Sidney Crosby now sad because they're trading away all these players.
So maybe they bring him to make him happy.
Here's one of your best friends. Let's have a
100-1, folks.
A very short amount of time, late in the NHL season.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so
we've got some good ones too.
We were talking NBA Cup earlier. I don't have a bet to win the actual NBA Cup.
No, we don't need that. We're going Lakers.
Yeah, but I'm going longer prices with the Lakers. LeBron James is 50-1 to win NBA Cup MVP.
Ooh.
I love it. They won it last year. I don't even know if he won it last year. I think he did win it last year, either him or Anthony Davis, obviously. But again, the possibility of winning something with your son. You're not going to win an NBA title with your son.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe the one thing you can win. You watch a banner go up together. You'll always have that at Staples Center, crypto.com, whatever they call it now.
I don't know.
I think LeBron James could just decide to be suddenly very motivated to win this tournament. I also like the Cavaliers. I like the Celtics, but their prices are shorter. The Cavaliers, their best player so far has been Darius Garland. It's being priced right now like Donovan Mitchell is, and he may just be. But Garland is 60-1, and here's one that we found in the deep sportsbook webs. It would be Evan Mobley. NBA Cup MVP
so deep in the sports
at 150.
Web.
Like this one isn't available everywhere, but we saw this one.
We found it somewhere and it's been placed.
Mobley's been awesome for the Cavs.
151
is actually crazy.
If we hit that one and Marc-Andre Fleury, we're retiring.
That's a parlay there. Forget the Lekkerimäki ladder.
Yeah.
That one will actually pay off some rents. So I'm going for some big prices. I like the Lakers. I like the Cavs. Maybe we'll find a way to get involved in the Celtics. But those are the three teams that I think are most logically going to have runs in this tournament.
I love it. A lot of sprinkles happening tonight, especially in my birthday parlay, sprinkling on their birthday cakes.
I don't know if you should bet anything, Shane Pinto.
No, I know. Because, no. How about Ridly Gregg to score tonight in a slap shot into the Maple Leafs net? That was the last time they played each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, it feels crazy. Specific? No, probably. But we should make overshot? Empty net slap shot. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next half hour.
Talk more Soto.
We're going to go through the charcuterie of topics, including Soto and more of your texts. See you in a minute.